It is enough after all, said Denny O'Dore, twinkling at her. You are attractive enough to be forgiven if you had no name at all. All were sitting now. Denny O'Dore said, I have heard of you, Dr. Pellerat, though we have never corresponded. You are a foundationer, are you not, from Terminus? Yes, Dr. Denny O'Dore. And you, Councilman Trevise, I seem to have heard that recently you were expelled from the council and exiled. I don't think I have ever understood why. Not expelled, sir. I am still a member of the council, although I don't know when I will take up my duties again. Nor exiled, quite. I was assigned a mission, concerning which we wish to consult you. Happy to try to help, said Denny O'Dore. And the blissful lady, is she from Terminus, too? Trevise interposed quickly. She is from elsewhere, doctor. Ah, a strange world, this elsewhere. A most unusual collection of human beings are native to it. But since two of you are from the Foundation's capital at Terminus, and the third is an attractive young woman, and Mitsa Lisalor is not known for her affection for either category, how is it that she recommends you to my care so warmly? I think, said Trevise, to get rid of us. The sooner you help us, you see, the sooner we will leave Camporeon. Then Eodore eyed Trevise with interest, again the twinkling smile, and said, Of course, a vigorous young man such as yourself might attract her, whatever his origin. She plays the role of cold vestal well, but not perfectly. I know nothing about that, said Trevise stiffly. And you had better not, in public at least. But I am a skeptic, and I am professionally unattuned to believing in surfaces. So, come, Councilman, what is your mission? Let me find out if I can help you. Trevise said, In this, Dr. Pellerat is our spokesman. I have no objection to that, said Denny O'Dore. Dr. Pellerat. Pellerat said, To put it at the simplest, dear doctor, I have all my mature life attempted to penetrate to the basic core of knowledge concerning the world on which the human species originated, and I was sent out, along with my good friend Golan Trevise, although, to be sure, I did not know him at the time, to find, if we could, the, oldest, I believe you call it. The oldest, said Denny O'Dore. I take it you mean Earth. Pellerat's jaw dropped. Then he said with a slight stutter, I was under the impression that is, I was given to understand that one did not... He looked at Trevise rather helplessly. Trevise said, Minister Lisalor told me that the word was not used on Camporeon.
You mean she did this?
Then Eudora's mouth turned downward, his nose screwed up, and he thrust his arms vigorously forward, crossing the first two fingers on each hand. Yes, said Trevise, that's what I mean. Denny O'Dore relaxed and laughed.
Nonsense, gentlemen. We do it as a matter of habit. And in the backwoods they may be serious about it, but on the whole it doesn't matter. I don't know any Camporellian who wouldn't say earth when annoyed or startled. It's the most common vulgarism we have.
Vulgarism? Said Pellerat faintly.
Or expletive, if you prefer.
Nevertheless, said Trevise, the minister seemed quite upset when I used the word.
Oh, well, she's a mountain woman.
What does that mean, sir?
What it says. Mitsalizalor is from the central mountain range. The children out there are brought up in what is called the good old-fashioned way, which means that no matter how well educated they become, you can never knock those crossed fingers out of them.
Then the word earth doesn't bother you at all, does it, Doctor? Said Bliss.
Not at all, dear lady. I am a skeptic.
Trevise said, I know what the word skeptic means in Galactic, but how do you use the word?
Exactly as you do, Councilman. I accept only what I am forced to accept by reasonably reliable evidence, and keep that acceptance tentative, pending the arrival of further evidence. That doesn't make us popular.
Why not? Said Trevise.
We wouldn't be popular anywhere. Where is the world whose people don't prefer a comfortable, warm, and well-worn belief, however illogical, to the chilly winds of uncertainty? Consider how you believe in the Selden plan without evidence.
Yes, said Trevise, studying his finger ends. I put that forward yesterday as an example, too. Pellerat said, May I return to the subject, old fellow? What is known about Earth that a skeptic would accept? Deniador said,
Very little. We can assume that there is a single planet on which the human species developed, because it is unlikely in the extreme that the same species, so nearly identical as to be interfertile, would develop on a number of worlds, or even on just two independently. We can choose to call this world of origin Earth. The belief is general here that Earth exists in this corner of the galaxy, for the worlds here are unusually old, and it is likely that the first worlds to be settled were close to Earth rather than far from it.
And has the Earth any unique characteristics aside from being the planet of origin? Asked Pellerat eagerly.
Do you have something in mind? Said Deniador, with his quick smile.
I'm thinking of its satellite, which some call the Moon. That would be unusual, wouldn't it?
That's a leading question, Dr. Pellerat. You may be putting thoughts into my mind.
I do not say what it is that would make the Moon unusual.
Its size, of course. Am I right? Yes, I see I am. All the legends of Earth speak of its vast array of living species and of its vast satellite, one that is some 3,000 to 3,500 kilometers in diameter. The vast array of life is easy to accept, since it would naturally have come about through biological evolution, if what we know of the process is accurate. A giant satellite is more difficult to accept. No other inhabited world in the galaxy has such a satellite. Large satellites are invariably associated with the uninhabited and uninhabitable gas giants. As a skeptic, then, I prefer not to accept the existence of the Moon.
Pellerat said, If Earth is unique in its possession of millions of species, might it not also be unique in its possession of a giant satellite? One uniqueness might imply the other. Deniador smiled.
I don't see how the presence of millions of species on Earth could create a giant satellite out of nothing.
But the other way around. Perhaps a giant satellite could help create the millions of species.
I don't see how that could be either.
Trevise said, What about the story of Earth's radioactivity?
That is universally told, universally believed.
But, said Trevise, Earth could not have been so radioactive as to preclude life in the billions of years when it supported life. How did it become radioactive? A nuclear war? That is the most common opinion, Councilman Trevise. From the manner in which you say that, I gather you don't believe it.
There is no evidence that such a war took place. Common belief, even universal belief, is not in itself evidence.
What else might have happened?
There is no evidence that anything happened. The radioactivity might be as purely invented a legend as the large satellite.
Pellerat said, What is the generally accepted story of Earth's history? I have, during my professional career, collected a large number of origin legends, many of them involving a world called Earth, or some name very much like that. I have none from Comporion, nothing beyond the vague mention of a Ben Bali, who might have come from nowhere, for all that Comporellian legends say.
That's not surprising. We don't usually export our legends, and I'm astonished you have found references even to Ben Bali. Superstition again.
But you are not superstitious, and you would not hesitate to talk about it, would you?
That's correct, said the small historian, casting his eyes upward at Pellerat. It would certainly add greatly, perhaps even dangerously, to my unpopularity if I did. But you three are leaving Comporion soon, and I take it you will never quote me as a source.
You have our word of honor, said Pellerat quickly.
Then, here is a summary of what is supposed to have happened, shorn of any supernaturalism or moralizing. Earth existed as the sole world of human beings for an immeasurable period, and then, about 20 to 25,000 years ago, the human species developed interstellar travel by way of the hyperspatial jump and colonized a group of planets. The settlers on these planets made use of robots, which had first been devised on Earth before the days of hyperspatial travel. And do you know what robots are, by the way?
Yes, said Trevise. We have been asked that more than once. We know what robots are.
The settlers, with a thoroughly roboticized society, developed a high technology and unusual longevity and despised their ancestral world. According to more dramatic versions of their story, they dominated and oppressed the ancestral world. Eventually, then, Earth sent out a new group of settlers, among whom robots were forbidden. Of the new worlds, Comporion was among the first. Our own patriots insist it was the first, but there is no evidence of that a skeptic can accept. The first group of settlers died out, and...
Trevise said, Why did the first set die out, Dr. Deniodor?
Why? Usually, they are imagined by our romantics as having been punished for their crimes by he who punishes, though no one bothers to say why he waited so long. But one doesn't have to resort to fairy tales. It is easy to argue that a society that depends totally on robots becomes soft and decadent, dwindling and dying out of sheer boredom, or more subtly, by losing the will to live. The second wave of settlers, without robots, lived on and took over the entire galaxy. But Earth grew radioactive and slowly dropped out of sight. The reason usually given for this is that there were robots on Earth, too, since the first wave had encouraged that.
Bliss, who had listened to the account with some visible impatience, said,
Well, Dr. Deniodor, radioactivity or not, and however many waves of settlers there might have been, the crucial question is a simple one. Exactly where is Earth? What are its coordinates?
Deniador said.
The answer to that question is, I don't know. But come, it is time for lunch. I can have one brought in, and we can discuss Earth over it for as long as you want.
You don't know, said Trevise, the sound of his voice rising in pitch and intensity.
Actually, as far as I know, no one knows.
But that is impossible.
Councilman, said Deniador with a soft sigh, if you wish to call the truth impossible, that is your privilege, but it will get you nowhere.
Chapter 7. Leaving Camporeon. 26. Luncheon consisted of a heap of soft, crusty balls that came in different shades and that contained a variety of fillings. Deniador picked up a small object, which unfolded into a pair of thin, transparent gloves, and put them on. His guests followed suit. Bliss said,
What is inside these objects, please?
Deniador said,
The pink ones are filled with spicy chopped fish, a great Camporeon delicacy. These yellow ones contain a cheese filling that is very mild. The green ones contain a vegetable mixture. Do eat them while they are quite warm. Later, we will have hot almond pie and the usual beverages. I might recommend the hot cider. In a cold climate, we have a tendency to heat our foods, even desserts.
You do yourself well, said Pellerat.
Not really, said Deniodor. I'm being hospitable to guests. For myself, I get along on very little. I don't have much body mass to support, as you have probably noticed.
Trevise bit into one of the pink ones, and found it very fishy indeed, with an overlay of spices that was pleasant to the taste, but which, he thought, along with the fish itself, would remain with him for the rest of the day, and perhaps into the night. When he withdrew the object with the bite taken out of it, he found that the crust had closed in over the contents. There was no squirt, no leakage, and for a moment he wondered at the purpose of the gloves. There seemed no chance of getting his hands moist and sticky if he didn't use them, so he decided it was a matter of hygiene. The gloves substituted for a washing of the hands if that were inconvenient, and custom probably now dictated their use, even if the hands were washed. Liselore hadn't used gloves when he had eaten with her the day before. Perhaps that was because she was a mountain woman. He said, Would it be unmannerly to talk business over lunch?
By Camporeon standards, Councilman, it would be. But you are my guests, and we will go by your standards. If you wish to speak seriously, and do not think, or care, that that might diminish your pleasure in the food, please do so, and I will join you.
Trevise said, Thank you. Minister Liselore implied, No, she stated quite bluntly, that skeptics were unpopular on this world. Is that so? Deniador's good humor seemed to intensify.
Certainly. How hurt we'd be if we weren't. Camporeon, you see, is a frustrated world. Without any knowledge of the details, there is the general mythic belief that once, many millennia ago, when the inhabited galaxy was small, Camporeon was the leading world. We never forget that. And the fact that in known history we have not been leaders irks us, fills us, the population in general, that is, with a feeling of injustice. Yet what can we do? The government was forced to be a loyal vassal of the emperor once, and is a loyal associate of the foundation now. And the more we are made aware of our subordinate position, the stronger the belief in the great mysterious days of the past become. What then can Camporeon do? They could never defy the empire in older times, and they can't openly defy the Foundation now. They take refuge, therefore, in attacking and hating us, since we don't believe the legends and laugh at the superstitions. Nevertheless, we are safe from the grosser effects of persecution. We control the technology, and we fill the faculties of the universities. Some of us, who are particularly outspoken, have difficulty in teaching classes openly. I have that difficulty, for instance, though I have my students and hold meetings quietly off campus. Nevertheless, if we were really driven out of public life, the technology would fail, and the universities would lose accreditation with the galaxy generally. Presumably, such is the folly of human beings. The prospects of intellectual suicide might not stop them from indulging their hatred, but the Foundation supports us. Therefore, we are constantly scolded and sneered at and denounced and never touched.
Trevise said, "Is it popular opposition that keeps you from telling us where Earth is? Do you fear that, despite everything, the anti-skeptic feeling might turn ugly if you go too far?" Deniador shook his head.
"No. Earth's location is unknown. I am not hiding anything from you out of fear, or for any other reason."
"But look," said Trevise urgently, "there are a limited number of planets in this sector of the galaxy that possess the physical characteristics associated with habitability, and almost all of them must be not only inhabitable, but inhabited, and therefore well known to you. How difficult would it be to explore the sector for a planet that would be habitable were it not for the fact that it was radioactive? Besides that, you would look for such a planet with a large satellite in attendance. Between radioactivity and a large satellite, Earth would be absolutely unmistakable and could not be missed even with only a casual search. It might take some time, but that would be the only difficulty."
Deniador said, "The skeptic's view is, of course, that Earth's radioactivity and its large satellite are both simply legends. If we look for them, we look for sparrow milk and rabbit feathers."
"Perhaps, but that shouldn't stop Comporion from at least taking on the search. If they find a radioactive world of the proper size for habitability, with a large satellite, what an appearance of credibility it would lend to Corporalian legendry in general."
Deniador laughed. "It may be that Comporion doesn't search for that very reason. If we fail, or if we find an Earth obviously different from the legends, the reverse would take place. Comporalian legendry in general would be blasted and made into a laughingstock. Comporion wouldn't risk that."
Trevise paused, then went on very earnestly. "Besides, even if we discount those two uniquities, if there is such a word in Galactic, of radioactivity and a large satellite, there is a third that, by definition, must exist, without any reference to legends. Earth must have upon it either a flourishing life of incredible diversity, or the remnants of one, or, at the very least, the fossil record of such a one."
Deniador said, "Councilman, while Comporion has sent out no organized search party for Earth, we do have occasion to travel through space, and we occasionally have reports from ships that have strayed from their intended routes for one reason or another. Jumps are not always perfect, as perhaps you know. Nevertheless, there have been no reports of any planets with properties resembling those of the legendary Earth, or any planet that is bursting with life. Nor is any ship likely to land on what seems an uninhabited planet in order that the crew might go fossil hunting. If then, in thousands of years, nothing of the sort has been reported, I am perfectly willing to believe that locating Earth is impossible, because Earth is not there to be located."
Trevise said in frustration, "But Earth must be somewhere. Somewhere there is a planet on which humanity and all the familiar forms of life associated with humanity evolved. If Earth is not in this section of the galaxy, it must be elsewhere.
Perhaps, said Deniador cold-bloodedly, but in all this time it hasn't turned up anywhere.
People haven't really looked for it.
Well, apparently you are. I wish you luck, but I would never bet on your success.
Treviz said, have there been attempts to determine the possible position of Earth by indirect means, by some means other than a direct search?
Yes,
said two voices at once. Deniador, who was the owner of one of the voices, said to Pellerat,
are you thinking of Yareth's project?
I am, said Pellerat.
Then would you explain it to the councilman? I think he would more readily believe you than me.
Pellerat said, you see, Golan, in the last days of the Empire, there was a time when the search for origins, as they called it, was a popular pastime, perhaps to get away from the unpleasantness of the surrounding reality. The Empire was in a process of disintegration at that time, you know. It occurred to a Libyan historian, Humbal Yareth, that whatever the planet of origin, it would have settled worlds near itself sooner than it would settle planets farther away. In general, the farther a world from the point of origin, the later it would have been settled. Suppose, then, one recorded the date of settlement of all habitable planets in the galaxy, and made networks of all that were a given number of millennia old. There could be a network drawn through all planets 10,000 years old, another through those 12,000 years old, still another through those 15,000 years old. Each network would, in theory, be roughly spherical, and they should be roughly concentric. The older networks would form spheres smaller in radius than the younger ones, and if one worked out all the centers, they should fall within a comparatively small volume of space that would include the planet of origin, Earth. Pellerat's face was very earnest as he kept drawing spherical surfaces with his cupped hands. Do you see my point, Golan? Treviz nodded.
Yes, but I take it that it didn't work.
Theoretically, it should have, old fellow. One trouble was that times of origin were totally inaccurate. Every world exaggerated its own age to one degree or another, and there was no easy way of determining age independently of legend.
Bliss said, carbon-14 decay in ancient timber.
Certainly, dear, said Pellerat. But you would have had to get cooperation from the worlds in question, and that was never given. No world wanted its own exaggerated claim of age to be destroyed, and the Empire was then in no position to override local objections in a matter so unimportant. It had other things on its mind. All that Yareth could do was to make use of worlds that were only 2,000 years old at most, and whose founding had been meticulously recorded under reliable circumstances. There were few of those, and while they were distributed in roughly spherical symmetry, the center was relatively close to Trantor, the imperial capital, because that was where the colonizing expeditions had originated for those relatively few worlds. That, of course, was another problem. Earth was not the only point of origin of settlement for other worlds. As time went on, the older worlds sent out settlement expeditions of their own, and at the time of the height of empire, Trantor was a rather copious source of those.
Yareth was unfairly laughed at and ridiculed, and his professional reputation was destroyed.
Treviz said, I get the story, Janoff. Dr. Deniador, is there then nothing at all you could give me that represents the faintest possibility of hope? Is there any other world where it is conceivable there may be some information concerning Earth?
Deniador sank into doubtful thought for a while.
Well, he said at last, drawing out the word hesitantly, as a skeptic, I must tell you that I'm not sure that Earth exists or has ever existed. However...
He fell silent again. Finally, Bliss said,
I think you've thought of something that might be important, Doctor.
Important? I doubt it, said Deniador faintly. Perhaps amusing, however. Earth is not the only planet whose position is a mystery. There are the worlds of the first group of settlers, the spacers, as they are called in our legends. Some call the planets they inhabited the spacer worlds. Others call them the forbidden worlds. The latter name is now the usual one. In their pride and prime, the legend goes, the spacers had lifetimes stretching out for centuries and refused to allow our own short-lived ancestors to land on their worlds. After we had defeated them, the situation was reversed. We scorned to deal with them and left them to themselves, forbidding our own ships and traders to deal with them. Hence, those planets became the forbidden worlds. We were certain, so the legend states, that he who punishes would destroy them without our intervention, and apparently he did. At least no spacer has appeared in the galaxy to our knowledge in many millennia.
Do you think that the spacers would know about Earth? Said Treves.
Conceivably, since their worlds were older than any of ours. That is, if any spacers exist, which is extremely unlikely.
Even if they don't exist, their worlds do, and may contain records.
If you can find the worlds.
Treves looked exasperated. Do you mean to say that the key to Earth, the location of which is unknown, may be found on spacer worlds, the location of which is also unknown? Deniador shrugged.
We have had no dealings with them for 20,000 years. No thought of them. They, too, like Earth, have receded into the mists.
How many worlds did the spacers live on?
The legends speak of 50 such worlds, a suspiciously round number. There were probably far fewer.
And you don't know the location of a single one of the 50?
Well, now, I wonder.
What do you wonder?
Deniador said,
since primeval history is my hobby, as it is Dr. Pellerat's, I have occasionally explored old documents in search of anything that might refer to early time, something more than legends. Last year, I came upon the records of an old ship, records that were almost indecipherable. It dated back to the very old days when our world was not yet known as Camporeon. The name Bailey World was used, which it seems to me may be an even earlier form of the Benbali world of our legends.
Pellerat said excitedly, have you published it?
No, said Deniador. I do not wish to dive until I am sure there is water in the swimming pool, as the old saying has it. You see, the record says that the captain of the ship had visited a spacer world and taken off with him a spacer woman.
Bliss said,
but you said that the spacers did not allow visitors.
Exactly. And that is the reason I don't publish the material. It sounds incredible. There are vague tales that could be interpreted as referring to the spacers and to their conflict with the settlers, our own ancestors. Such tales exist not only on Camporeon, but on many worlds in many variations, but all are in absolute accord in one respect. The two groups,
spacers and settlers did not mingle. There was no social contact, let alone sexual contact. And yet, apparently, the settler captain and the spacer woman were held together by bonds of love. This is so incredible that I see no chance of the story being accepted as anything but, at best, a piece of romantic historical fiction.
Trevise looked disappointed. Is that all?
No, Councilman, there is one more matter. I came across some figures in what was left of the log of the ship that might, or might not, represent spatial coordinates. If they were, and I repeat, since my skeptic's honor compels me to, that they might not be, then internal evidence made me conclude they were the spatial coordinates of three of the spacer worlds. One of them might be the spacer world where the captain landed, and from which he withdrew his spacer love.
Trevise said, might it not be that even if the tale is fiction, the coordinates are real?
It might be, said Deniador. I will give you the figures, and you are free to use them, but you might get nowhere. And yet I have an amusing notion.
His quick smile made its appearance. What is that? Said Trevise.
What if one of those sets of coordinates represented Earth?
Camporeon's sun, distinctly orange, was larger in appearance than the sun of Terminus, but it was low in the sky and gave out little heat. The wind, fortunately light, touched Trevise's cheek with icy fingers. He shivered inside the electrified coat he had been given by Mitsa Lizalor, who now stood next to him. He said, It must warm up sometime, Mitsa. She glanced up at the sun briefly, and stood there in the emptiness of the spaceport, showing no signs of discomfort. Tall, large, wearing a lighter coat than Trevise had on, and if not impervious to the cold, at least scornful of it. She said, We have a beautiful summer. It is not a long one, but our food crops are adapted to it. The strains are carefully chosen so that they grow quickly in the sun and do not frostbite easily. Our domestic animals are well furred, and Camporeon wool is the best in the galaxy by general admission. Then, too, we have farm settlements in orbits about Camporeon that grow tropical fruit. We actually export canned pineapples of superior flavor. Most people who know us as a cold world don't know that.
Trevise said, I thank you for coming to see us off, Mitsa, and for being willing to cooperate with us on this mission of ours. For my own peace of mind, however, I must ask whether you will find yourself in serious trouble over this.
No.
She shook her head proudly.
No trouble. In the first place, I will not be questioned. I am in control of transportation, which means I alone set the rules for this spaceport and others, for the entry stations, for the ships that come and go. The Prime Minister depends on me for all that, and is only too delighted to remain ignorant of its details. And even if I were questioned, I have but to tell the truth. The government would applaud me for not turning the ship over to the Foundation. So would the people, if it were safe to let them know. And the Foundation itself would not know of it.
Trevise said, The government might be willing to keep the ship from the Foundation, but would they be willing to approve your letting us take it away? Lizalor smiled.
You are a decent human being, Trevise. You have fought tenaciously to keep your ship, and now that you have it, you take the trouble to concern yourself with my welfare.
She reached toward him tentatively, as though tempted to give some sign of affection, and then, with obvious difficulty, controlled the impulse. She said with a renewed brusqueness, "Even if they question my decision, I have but to tell them that you have been, and still are, searching for the oldest. And they will say I did well to get rid of you as quickly as I did, ship and all. And they will perform the rites of atonement that you were ever allowed to land in the first place, though there was no way we might have guessed what you were doing. Do you truly fear misfortune to yourself and the world because of my presence?" "Indeed," said Lisa Lore stolidly. Then she said more softly, "You have brought misfortune to me already, for now that I have known you, Camporellian men will seem more sapless still. I will be left with an unappeasable longing. He who punishes has already seen to that." Trevise hesitated, then said, "I do not wish you to change your mind on this matter, but I do not wish you to suffer needless apprehension either. You must know that this matter of my bringing misfortune on you is simply superstition." "The skeptic told you that, I presume?"
"I know it without his telling me."
Lieselore brushed her face, for a thin rime was gathering on her prominent eyebrows, and said, "I know there are some who think it superstition. That the oldest brings misfortune is, however, a fact. It has been demonstrated many times, and all the clever skeptical arguments can't legislate the truth out of existence." She thrust out her hand suddenly. "Goodbye, Golan. Get on the ship and join your companions before your soft Terminian body freezes in our cold but kindly wind."
"Goodbye, Nietzsche, and I hope to see you when I return."
"Yes, you have promised to return, and I have tried to believe that you would. I have even told myself that I would come out and meet you at your ship in space, so that misfortune would fall only on me and not upon my world. But you will not return."
"Not so. I will. I would not give up that easily, having had pleasure of you."
And at that moment, Trevise was firmly convinced that he meant it. "I do not doubt your romantic impulses, my sweet foundationer. But those who venture outward on a search for the oldest will never come back, anywhere. I know that in my heart." Trevise tried to keep his teeth from chattering.
It was from cold, and he didn't want her to think it was from fear. He said,
"That, too, is superstition."
"And yet," she said, "that, too, is true."
28. It was good to be back in the pilot room of the Far Star. It might be cramped for room. It might be a bubble of imprisonment in infinite space. Nevertheless, it was familiar, friendly, and warm.
Bliss said, "I'm glad you finally came aboard. I was wondering how long you would remain with the minister."
"Not long," said Trevise. "It was cold."
"It seemed to me," said Bliss, "that you were considering remaining with her and postponing the search for Earth."